Welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan in with you, of course. It's been a busy week. I know it. A lot of things to look at news-wise. I know we're in the middle of an undetermined election right now, but we are going to turn our attention back to COVID-19 for a moment. There are a lot of topics that we could discuss and a lot of different things, avenues that we could go down. But we're going to be looking at the number of cases and the positivity rate, the hospitalizations. Those are all up. And so we don't want to lose track of where we are with that, even though we are in the middle of an election. So on the phone with me again is Dr. John Love, of course, Butler Health System Infectious Disease Specialist. As always, Dr. Love, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Tracy, anytime.
Now, first of all, I'm going to start off with this. I wanted to extend my condolences to you, your staff, the family of two individuals who have passed away. Of what I understand, they passed away yesterday. Now, we often get numbers from the Butler Hospital, so the numbers we reported yesterday did not reflect that. So since we've done that report and I have you on the phone, I just want to extend my condolences to all of you.
I appreciate that. You know, our hearts go out to the families, you know, for each of these patients. You know, unfortunately, you know, not the first ones to die from COVID in our hospital, and certainly won't be the last.
And I'm glad you point that out, because a lot of times when I talk to you, I don't realize that you've had a death until after we've talked. And so I just want to make sure that we make that point, that it has not been weeks and months since a death at Butler Hospital. And that's one thing that I ran into online, where I saw a post and somebody said, hey, it's been so long, you know, we haven't had deaths in this county. And that's just not true, is it?
No, it's not. You know, the Pennsylvania Department of Health website, their dashboard tracker, anyone can look at the dates that deaths occurred at, you know, Butler County residents, according to the DOH. So, I mean, those are available to anyone with internet access. So we care for a lot of Butler County, but the patients maybe sought care in Pittsburgh, or, you know, were somewhere else, or so we may not know all of the cases of Butler County residents who have passed away, because they didn't get their acute care for that event here. Similarly, you know, we may have deaths in the hospital from residents of other counties. Everyone always perseverates about, was it a Butler County resident? Was it a Butler County resident? Like a life from Venango County or Armstrong County means something less. It gets a little tiresome.
Well, let me ask you about your staff right now, because one thing that you said to me last time we talked that has just stuck in my head is, all we're asking for is a little help from the community, and it's just a matter of wearing masks. And what stuck in my head was, all we're asking for is some help. That was the line that stuck in my head since the last time I talked to you. So can you talk about what your staff is going through right now? Is it tension? Is it exhaustion? Is it nervousness? What are you all going through?
I will preface any comment by saying, you know, we have a phenomenal staff here. And I think one thing that patients tell us over and over again when they get here, or care here compared to care at a larger hospital in the city, they speak about how kind and personable and connected our staff is to our patients. And I'm talking not just our nurses, you know, our aides, our respiratory therapist, our dietitian, like everyone is really patient focused here. And our staff is part of this community. Our staff, we've gone from typically, you know, recently, I think as I've said repeatedly, we have, you know, two or three or four cases in house and they're doing okay. And we've gone from that just really over the weekend to having, just on the medical floor alone, outside the ICU, on the medical floor, 12, 13, 14 patients. So that means that there are multiple nurses taking care of COVID patients. Taking care of these patients requires extra time because of the putting on and taking off of the protective equipment. Some of these patients are very sick. You know, they're on very high levels of oxygen. They need a lot of attention. And so, you know, when I talk with especially the nursing staff on who are involved with the care of the COVID patients, a lot of them are, it's something like fatigued or tired, but it's more like a resignation. Like, we're dealing with this again in this capacity. Like, I was hoping we were going to avoid having this kind of number here because we'd been doing so well, or we had been so fortunate. People are very committed to doing their jobs. They are very committed to taking care of these patients, all of our patients, COVID or not. And we are all just focused on continuing to provide high-quality care to patients with COVID and to patients without COVID who need just routine medical care here.
And you do have a great staff. The reason I ask is because you are human beings as well. And I've asked that of many, many individuals that I've talked to over the past many months of the coronavirus, because you are the helpers. I mean, you're the doctors. I mean, you're on the front line, but you're human beings as well.
I would argue that some of our nurses are superhuman, but you're right. At the end of the day, you know, these people are worried about their families, are worried about themselves, they're worried about how bad is this going to get. Yes, we're doing okay right now. We're managing with our numbers currently, but okay, what if this keeps going up? We don't know what's going to happen.
Well, let's talk about your numbers for a little bit, and if you could explain that again, because when I just heard you a moment ago, you were saying 13, 14 on the floor. So what does that mean to you? Because when we release the numbers that we get from the hospital, people may hear what you say and look at our numbers and say, wait, there's a disparity there, because on Monday we had from the hospital 16 patients being treated for coronavirus with 4 in the ICU. As of Wednesday, we had 18 patients that you were treating for coronavirus with 6 in the ICU. And then, of course, I mentioned at the beginning of our segment here, there were 2 deaths that will be on the information that we get here shortly, most likely tomorrow. But what does that mean to you, and what should we take away from the 18 number when you're saying there's like 13, 14 on the floor?
When we think about we report our coronavirus numbers, or at least we look at them internally. So our coronavirus patients, our COVID patients, are going to be housed in one of 2 types of hospital rooms. One is a general medicine kind of ward, and the other one is in the intensive care unit. So when I talk about being on the ward, I'm talking about just being in a medical bed rather than being in an intensive care bed. The difference is the severity of their illness. Patients who require a ventilator, patients who require medicines to support their blood pressure, patients who require really intensive kind of care go to the intensive care unit, as the name would suggest. The other folks are hanging out on our medical floor and our dedicated kind of COVID care area. We get the kind of the spectrum there from patients who are maybe even don't require any supplemental oxygen to people who are in really high levels of supplemental oxygen but don't quite meet the criteria to go to the intensive care unit. If you look at the number of, say, 18, within that is 2 numbers. You know, one is on the ward and one is in the ICU. And the ICU patients may or may not be intubated and ventilated. It depends on kind of where they are and their trajectory. I can tell you the last numbers I have, which were generated last evening, looking at it. So we currently have 13 patients on the medical floor, and then 5 in the ICU, 3 of which are on ventilators.
Let me ask you about those numbers then, whether we're talking 16, 18, 13, those are double digits. Mm-hmm. And according to our records that we keep here at the newsroom, I haven't seen double digits 4 months since March.
Since March and
yeah.
April.
So do you know the reason why in the past week we all of a sudden went from single digits to double digits?
Well, I mean, for the last month and a half, you and I, Department of Health, you know, here at the hospital, we've all been watching the rise in the number of cases in the community. We've been saying, listen, you know, we're not seeing a lot of hospitalizations yet from this, because we think this is, you know, a lot of these numbers are being driven with cases in young, healthy people, college students, even, you know, adolescents. But sooner or later, that volume of virus incubates in that population and will eventually make its way into folks that are older, folks that have other medical problems, folks that are not going to tolerate an infection. And so all this, I mean, this is predictable. This is what we've been worried about. And this is why we want to keep our community levels low, so that we don't end up with this hitting a bunch of people elsewhere, you know, who can't tolerate the infection as well. So I think this has just shown that there's been sustained viral replication in the community, and it has infiltrated all nooks and crannies of our population. It's not just nursing home residents. It's not just college students. It's not just, you name it. It's just kind of everywhere. And as people start moving back indoors and not really taking precautions to mitigate risk of transmission, we're going to keep seeing this. And I'm worried that we're going to continue to have this community spread, and we're going to continue to see cases admitted to the hospital because of their intolerance for the infection.
I assume these numbers are not showing any possible effects from the Trump rally, which was on October 31st at the airport. And I mentioned that event for this reason only, because I don't recall any other event that was that big in this county since the pandemic started. Again, I assume you're not seeing the numbers that you're seeing today because of that rally. If that's true, what are you expecting to see, or what are you thinking you may see? Because there were a lot of people together at the airport at the same time.
Yeah, so this surge of admissions definitely started around the time of the rally, but it is not in relationship to the rally. So just because things are coincident in time does not mean there's a causality. You know, these patients had been sick for several days before coming to the hospital. Like I said, our really uptake was over the weekend, and you know, obviously the rally on Saturday night. There's no way that can be causative for that. That said, you know, we've had a lot of community spread. We've had a lot of cases going on in the community. We had tens of thousands of people in very close confines. Even when things are outdoors, there can still be spread. It's believed to be somewhat safer because of the ventilation, but it's not a panacea. And so I am worried that in a few weeks we are going to see a rise in cases that are related to that rally event. It may not be in participants themselves. It may be, you know, people that they live with, people that they work with. The other issue is it's going to be kind of, these are difficult to track because a lot of these people, you know, may be from Butler County, but a lot of them aren't. You know, they came from other locales. There have been some studies, and there's something being published out of Stanford that looked at this phenomenon of basically county case levels after rallies like this. They see an increase over the already high background levels. They see an increase after, you know, in the weeks after one of these kinds of rallies. To your point, I will say any event like this could be doing the same thing. This virus does not know political parties. If this were a crowd gathered for a large sporting event, this were a large crowd gathered for, say, a large religious event in a similar scenario, we'd be talking about the same thing. So I say that because I don't want people to hear any kind of political message out of this. I want them to hear a safety message. And this virus is agnostic. It just doesn't care.
Dr. John Love with us, Butler Health System infectious disease specialist, talking about where we are right now with COVID-19 and the hospitalizations and the ICU patients right now in the hospital. Are you near capacity at Butler Hospital?
We are not. In pre-COVID times, the hospital has a kind of an ebb and flow volume to it. When we head into certain times of the year, we expect to see certain patterns. As we head into influenza season, we typically see an increase in admissions that happens with respiratory viruses. We have at least two acute care wards in the hospital that most days of the year are not open. You know, there are beds there, they're ready to go, but we don't need them, so they're closed down. Those are part of our standard capacity here at the hospital. And so we flux into those when we need them for whatever situation. We have opened one of those up in part basically to move patients out of the shared COVID ward into another ward to make more space for COVID patients in the COVID ward. So we're not beyond our capacity. We're not down at Broad Street School or going to off-sites or doing all this kind of crazier plans. During our previous concerns back in March and April, you remember we shut down non-emergent surgeries. One of our overflow areas for COVID patients was our PACU, our post-anesthetic care unit. We have not reconverted that to a COVID care area. You know, we're still doing full breadth of medical care here and surgery. So there's nothing that's kind of changed about all that.
So you don't have a number like 20, 25 beds, 30 beds before you start enacting one of those plans?
You know, we look at this every day and say, okay, where are our numbers? Where are we going? Where are the rest of our numbers? Meaning, listen, how full is the rest of the hospital? You know, how can we move things around? Just because we have a surge in COVID, you know, if our numbers are down elsewhere, you know, we can absorb that handily. So we have a lot of different ways to kind of open release valves. and manage this. So right now, you know, we've dusted off our plans for kind of event planning and surge capacity and things like that, but none of them have been put into place in any way right now.
One of the rumors that I know are out there in the community right now is that Butler Hospital is sending some patients to Pittsburgh. Is that true or not? Can you address that?
As usual, there's a simple answer and there's a more complicated answer. So basically, the bottom line is, pre-COVID or during COVID, if a patient requires a higher level of care or a specialty kind of care that we cannot provide here at Butler Memorial Hospital, we transfer the patient to a location that can. And that may be a certain kind of surgery. It may be a certain kind of specialist. It may be that the patient has certain needs that, again, we just can't fill. But we here know where what our limits are and can say, okay, listen, this guy or this lady needs blank. We don't have that here. We need to get them somewhere that does. So in that framework, yes, we have transferred patients with COVID elsewhere. Typically, it's because they have some complication that we are not as facile with managing as other locations. For example, there was recently a transfer to Pittsburgh when someone had a large stroke as a result of COVID. We just felt that the patient was going to deserve to go to a place with a more intensive stroke program than what we have here. Yeah, that was a reason for transfer. There are modes of oxygenation beyond ventilation, beyond a breathing tube, that are better done in tertiary care centers. And so we have transferred one or two patients during the pandemic for that reason, for that kind of support. By and large, we keep our patients. It's not we get a COVID patient, we transfer them, or we're getting full of COVID patients, so we're going to start shuttling them elsewhere. We have a COVID patient who has a medical issue that requires care that we cannot provide here. Let's get them somewhere that can.
You and I have talked about conditions and symptoms that you've seen through this pandemic. Anything new that you have seen where you sit back and think, well, I haven't seen that before yet? Or is that every day? I mean, is that what your life is?
We recently had a patient whose COVID presented with seizures, which is a little different. It's been reported. I don't think that we've had one here personally in Butler previously, but it was pretty obviously related given the timing and what we know about the CNS, our central nervous system penetration of the virus. So it all fits. It's just like, oh, yep. Okay, I can check that off of my list.
Yeah.
Now I've seen that less common presentation as opposed to the very common, febrile respiratory illness.
And two other issues I want to talk about. One being that when you talk about respiratory, I was just reading something about lung damage. Is that becoming more prominent when you're talking about COVID? And there's something that I read that's called long COVID. Is that something that's in your repertoire at this point?
Oh, yeah. It's difficult because the best way I can describe this is, right now, we've got to remember, our experience with this virus is less than a year old. So there is no human being walking this earth who is more than a year out from their infection with COVID-19. What we have seen here, and I can say this anecdotally, I can say this based on studies that have been published, there is a fraction of people who suffer symptoms for a long period of time. Now, a fraction being up to a third, depending on the population you're looking at, and long meaning, more than 4 weeks or so. The symptoms aren't typically respiratory failure and, things like that, but it is continued, say, shortness of breath or poor tolerance of exercise, getting fatigued easily. A lot of people report brain fog. They're not themselves yet, and this recovery for some people is taking weeks to months. Right now, we don't know what causes this specifically. Right now, we don't know if there is a way to treat this to help these people recover faster or to at least even just address the symptoms better. Those are all concerning, and that has a lot of morbidity, meaning just a lot of people being very negatively impacted by this infection. These are people who can't work for 4 to 6 weeks. The other concern is, as you mentioned, studies that are saying, that are using imaging modalities like CAT scans of the lungs or MRI of the heart and say, listen, you know, weeks after people had even mild infections, they still have what looks like either scarring or some kind of process going on in the lung tissue or in the heart muscle that makes us worried that they may have some long-term problems with those organs. And this is something we just don't know what the how that story is going to develop. Right now, we know that they have these abnormalities. Are those going to be things that resolve and are really not issues? Are they going to predispose in the future for lung disease, for heart failure, for other problems? I don't know. If I had my choice personally, I would rather not have any scarring in my lungs or problems with my heart muscle if I could avoid it. And so we're just back to, I would like as few people to get infected with this as possible because I'd like as few people to be at risk for this long-term problem.
Dr. Love, I just want to end on this. Again, I'll go back to that phrase that stuck in my head, and it was from a previous conversation of ours. And you had said, you know, we're just asking for some help at the hospital, and that's to wear a mask. So to end our conversation today, I'll let you have the floor on this topic because you have been so passionate about this one point about us wearing masks.
You know, I think masking is one of the most visible and least intrusive ways of trying to be as normal as we can. You know, there is good evidence that it helps prevent transmission from a sick person. There is some improving evidence that it may prevent people from acquiring it if exposed to COVID. There is even evidence that wearing a mask will mitigate the severity of infection, meaning even if I'm wearing a mask and I'm exposed to someone with COVID, I'm more likely to have a mild infection with it if I'm wearing a mask than if I'm not. And so for all of those reasons, this is a really helpful way that our community can try to do something to take control of this situation. As I've said before, the way to keep everyone 100% safe would be to lock everyone alone in their homes and not let them interact in person with anyone. That obviously is not practical. And so what we need to do are figure out ways that we are minimizing in-person interactions, and when those interactions are unavoidable, then using things like masks to reduce the risk. I still encourage people to not congregate in groups, especially indoors. We have seen a number of transmissions related to weddings, funerals, church services, you name it, baby showers, things that are, these are things that are very important to people, but you know, we have to reevaluate their place in our lives right now. And every effort needs to be taken to wear the mask, be, you know, at least 6 feet apart if you gotta be around someone. You know, we need to be considerate and cautious about other people's needs as well. And these actions aren't just for us, they're for our family, for our neighbors, and for our community. You know, and the more that we can do just as a community to reduce transmission, this can actively save lives. I don't want people to look at these numbers and say, well, you know, we're kind of already behind the eight ball, and why bother with any of this anymore? We've already lost. That is not accurate, and I don't want people to get a fatalistic view from these numbers. There is still a lot that we can do to tamp this down. There's still a lot we can do to keep people safe. Like I said, we could use the help from the community. The community has always rallied around this hospital when we've had other issues and other problems. I'm hoping that we can encourage people to step up for this as well.
Dr. John Love, Butler Health System, of course, infectious disease specialist. Thank you again for your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Tracy.